Hello and welcome to D2C Podcast. I'm Eric Dick. Today I'm talking with Nadia Ladak, co-founder and CEO of Marlowe, a trailblazing Toronto company redefining menstrual health with the world's first lubricated tampon. Marlowe started as a bold solution to a widespread yet overlooked issue in menstrual health, representing a paradigm shift in an industry long dominated by stagnant product offerings. In this episode, Nadia shares her unique insights on disrupting a traditional market, building a community-focused brand, and leveraging digital platforms for growth. Are you ready for a disruption dissertation? On with the show.
Post-pandemic, we learned that a lot of consumers were experiencing D2C fatigue and especially subscription fatigue. Over the pandemic, they signed up for all these different subscriptions and now they're ready to go back in store and the buying habits are going back in store. And so what we've really prioritized in the last year is we have a distributor and we're starting to launch into retailers. Right now, it's more like medium-sized retailers with like 10 doors, but we're also starting to have the conversations with the mass retailers and are on track to launch with a few big names that we can't share yet, but in the next year. What we really wanted to do was to build a community around our brand. And what we've been doing is producing content on Instagram, TikTok. We've published over 100 blogs. We've started to understand a bit more what makes a video go viral, and we found a key tip.
If you're a D2C brand on Shopify and you're not using Black Crow, then you're leaving significant revenue on the table. Black Crow uses your own data to help you identify customers returning to your site who would otherwise remain anonymous. The more customers you can identify, the more email and SMS abandonment messages you can send. You'll see incremental revenue almost immediately without having to change any of your existing flows. The best part? All it takes is a one-click integration. There's zero development work required. Head on over to blackcrow.ai/DTC to get started with a free 30-day trial. Nadia, welcome to the D2C podcast. I'm glad you could make it. Let's start by telling the audience why you've built Marlowe.
Definitely. So Marlowe actually started in our last year of university. I remember we were taking an entrepreneurship capstone course and our professors told us to find a problem that we're passionate about solving. And we didn't even realize that this is how most great businesses start. But we started to think about things as a group of friends that we were passionate about. And the area of menstrual health came up as something we wanted to tackle. It was something that impacted 50% of the population for 1 week every month for 39 years. And yet we hardly ever talk about periods. People are actually ashamed about it. The branding is overly feminine. It's always a woman somehow wearing all white on her period playing tennis. We never understood that. The environmental sustainability of the products was a huge problem. And the biggest problem we kept talking about was how painful tampons are to insert. And we started to talk about how you need them for swimming, how you need them, you know, to wear certain types of clothing, to be active on the go, and how it led to a lot of embarrassment and shame when you couldn't use the products. And it seemed like everyone around you, especially at a young age, were starting to use them. And if you were that person who was left out and felt like you couldn't use them, it led to a lot of mental health implications as well. And so that was really this moment when we decided to pick the problem of tampon insertion pain and to come up with a product to solve that, which was the very first lubricated tampon. And that was kind of the beginning of Marlowe and this overall brand and mission around menstrual health.
Amazing. And the incumbents in the space are just monolithic, right? They've just been the same people on the store shelves for decades and decades.
Exactly. It's the same players for the last 90 years. A lot of the companies were actually started by men who don't even menstruate. And so that was a big thing. We wanted to bring innovation into the space to tackle what the incumbents are currently doing in the market and to also create a whole new brand that's catered to that modern consumer.
So what year was this?
This was in 2020. It was also during the time of COVID and our last year got cut short. We had to all move away from, we were all in person. We had to move away from university, move back into our family homes, finish our degrees online. It was quite the time. And Health Canada was busy handling all of COVID when we were trying to get a device approved by Health Canada.
Oh my goodness. So basically you come up with this concept. At what point, I want to talk about the brand too. I'm curious about where the brand name came from, but what was once you have your sort of business plan, like what were your first steps to get this going?
So we actually, once we graduated, we decided that we had that summer off before starting our full-time jobs. Why not go in and actually start to research how we could bring this product to market? We started to partner with a research lab, gynecologists, pelvic physiotherapists to really start to develop prototypes and start to do the testing to bring this product to market. We started to partner with local ecosystem players. So we partnered with Tech Alliance in London, which was an awesome player that helped us understand the foundations of pitching and business models and starting to connect us with investors. We started to get some grant money in as well to fuel this development. So that was kind of the initial stages. And the name Marlo actually came, we were looking at a list of baby names and Marlo had stood out. It kind of represented this older sister persona that's spunky, that breaks down these taboo topics. And so we chose that name to represent the brand that and person that we wanted to create with Marlo.
Very cool. Okay, so you're consulting with all these people. How long did it take to get a prototype?
We got a prototype within the first 3 months, but to actually get the product approved, finalized by Health Canada was over a year-long process, which was quite a lengthy time. People don't realize that it's a medical device, so you have to go through all these stages of regulatory approval.
Was that made longer by the pandemic, do you think, or it would take someone now around the same amount of time?
I think the pandemic definitely extended the timelines a bit as well, but it does take up to like 8 months to bring a product like this to market, sometimes even longer. So I think it does create like that barrier to entry for other players who wanted to come and create something similar.
Cool. Okay, so talk about growth then. Talk about bringing it to market and talk about how you've been able to grow it.
So at the beginning, we didn't have a large marketing budget, especially in comparison to the big competitors. And so what we really wanted to do was to build a community around our brand. And what we've been doing is producing content on Instagram, TikTok. We've published over 100 blogs, really tackling any and every topic related to menstrual health and now into reproductive health as well. So things like how to manage each phase of your cycle or acne on your period, cramps on your period. We have a blog, we have TikTok content around that. At the beginning, it wasn't picking up, but then eventually it started to go viral and our videos were getting over 100 million views, really talking about this space. And so quite quickly, we started to organically grow our brand, grow our community, and now have grown into starting to go to Amazon now. We are starting to go into retailers. But it was really those early days of building that foundational community through our organic content.
So interesting. Again, you're going against these incumbents that are just like the default, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got to put yourself into the conversation in these interesting ways. You've done it with content. So describe your growth pie. What it sort of looks like. Is it SEO and organic TikTok would be two of the biggest drivers at this point?
Yes, exactly. Organic SEO and TikTok. We publish a lot of blogs around key questions that customers are searching. So for example, why does my tampon hurt is a question that's searched daily by thousands of people. And our blog is now number one ranked on Google for that question. And it relates to our product. So we started to get really strategic on the keywords we'd target, on the types of content we were putting out there, and just being relatable because it's not something that the big brands are doing, but we're able to be relatable and be that big sister to the next generation of menstruators and consumers.
Did you hire an SEO expert or did you just figure it out?
We just figured it out.
I did a class with GrowClass.
GrowClass is an amazing resource if anyone's interested in learning. And they taught us so much. Also, the startup accelerators and incubators that we were a part of, we would just soak up as much information as we could. And so we just learned a lot of these skills ourselves. We were not marketing or content experts by any means.
And I imagine word of mouth marketing is a big part of what happens behind the scenes with your growth as well, right? Because you are this disruptive concept. You are this new brand entering this tough space. So how have you fostered actual community and sort of word of mouth with your product?
Mm-hmm. I feel like one thing we really believe in is building in public. And it's this idea that a lot of startups are starting to do where the founders are almost like the face of the company. And we will get on like Zoom calls with customers. We'll host monthly AMA sessions. I'll post like everything behind the scenes of like packing orders in our bedroom when we first started, or, you know, my dad helping us with different things. We have different characters like my partner, the Marlo boyfriend, or our intern over the summer, intern Jamie had a whole character online. So really developing those authentic relationships and showing people the behind the scenes of what it's like to be a founder. And then people felt like they could resonate and they could connect with us and they started to give their feedback. They started to share it with their friends. So I think that was a really good idea, was around just like having that personal brand and like building in public with all of our community.
And you mentioned videos that get 100 million. You literally have a video or videos that have reached 100 million views. That's incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's just finding that topic that it's for so long periods have been stigmatized. People have never been comfortable talking about it. But now we're breaking that taboo. And so it's kind of like a wake up call of, you know, this is something that happens to me every month and I shouldn't be afraid and ashamed to talk about it.
And it's a global thing. I imagine. Just can you describe the sort of the shape of the audience that you've attracted on platforms like TikTok? Is it a very global audience? Is it really targeted in North America?
It's definitely a very global audience, majority in the US, and then we're Canadian, so a lot in Canada as well, but that US market is quickly surpassing the Canadian market, and we have plans to expand. Right now, we only offer the product in US and Canada, but we want to expand to the UK in the new year and have a growth plan of reaching some other markets as well.
What can you say about your growth like over the last couple of years? Like as you've kind of found your footing, found your community, how do you contextualize your growth at this point?
So one thing that we're really focused on is post-pandemic, we learned that a lot of consumers were experiencing D2C fatigue and especially subscription fatigue over the pandemic. They signed up for all these different subscriptions and now they're ready to go back in store and the buying habits are going back in store. And so what we've really prioritized in the last year is we have a distributor and we're starting to launch into retailers. Right now it's more like medium-sized retailers with like 10 doors, but we're also starting to have the conversations with the mass retailers and are on track to launch with a few big names that we can't share yet, but in the next year. We also went on Dragon's Den this year, which was a huge opportunity to like have website traffic and awareness and publicity. And I think people just had all this excitement around the episode. We hosted like a viewing party with our investors and key other founders and stakeholders. So those two things this year were huge opportunities for growth. And next year we have other products we want to launch. And we want to just build this overall household name when it comes to menstrual and reproductive health.
Interesting. Is it still within the menstrual health area or is it in more general wellness, the products you're thinking of building?
Right now, the first few products are going to be in menstrual wellness, but our long-term vision is definitely overall reproductive health and this idea that we can grow with our community as they tackle different reproductive health life stages. So right now they're starting with periods and, you know, in a few years, then they'll get to birth control, then they'll get to pregnancy, then post-pregnancy, then menopause. So this whole life cycle of reproductive health just has so much stigma. And how can we grow with our community and create products and education that cater to them across these different life stages?
And it's a real opportunity, like having had a child, the whole system is kind of, you get the sense it was kind of made by men in a lot of ways. And and I imagine when you mentioned it earlier with these huge corporations kind of owning the space for so long. So I feel like there probably is a real opportunity to be in that conversation. How has it gone in retail? It's funny. I follow this one TikToker who basically just goes to grocery stores and he highlights which companies on any given store shelf are not megacorps. Literally, I think the one company is called Megacorp, but it basically like just shows, and it's usually like on most store shelves, it's like one in the US, it's like one or two brands that are not owned by these like mega corps. So mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, I guess starting small is a big way to do that, starting with medium-sized grocers. But how are you finding just competing overall on shelf with these legacy players that probably have lower costs because they're producing at such high volumes?
Mm-hmm. The reception actually is really good with the retailers. And the reason being is they're trying to find a way to bring Gen Z consumers into store. So a lot of Gen Z are usually purchasing on Amazon. They have these subscriptions. And so a big target for a lot of these retailers are to find ways to bring Gen Z in store. And the fact that that is our target demographic and that we're going viral on TikTok, they really like the idea that by the time someone comes into store, they would already have brand awareness. A lot of times these bigger companies are like spending on flyers and different promotions and TV commercials, and they're trying to generate excitement by the time they're already on shelf, whereas we already have that brand awareness before someone even walks into the store. And we can say that, you know, we're cross promoting other brands, people will come in and purchase skincare, then they'll come purchase hair care. So a lot of people are actually excited about the opportunity to bring in a brand that targets that more modern consumer.
Very cool. Okay, walk me through the anatomy. So you don't know when a video is going to go viral, I guess. You might have an idea now that you've had a number of them that have gone really well. But like, what happens when you get a video that just like takes off to the level that you've had some? Do you like hit the panic button and just sort of like scale up production? Or what are the steps you take once you've had a video that goes viral?
So we've started to understand a bit more what makes a video go viral. And we found a key tip is it's all about the hook. And there's a couple of people on TikTok starting to get into this too, but it's all around that first 3 to 5 seconds and thinking of almost something clickbaity, but like verbally. So like, these are the 5 ways to grow your brand, or this is the number one way to make your period more comfortable. Anything that's just really makes you want to stop scrolling in that first few seconds really helps the video go viral. And it doesn't matter what you say after, but if you just have that attention grabbing piece at the beginning, a lot of times that's what helps it go viral. And once it does go viral, we start to track our inventory, make sure it's all set to go. A lot of times we find people don't necessarily always purchase right from that video, but then they sign up to our email newsletter, they sign up to our SMS text list, they start to engage more with the brand, follow the behind the scenes of the founders through those channels, and then they end up purchasing after like a few weeks. So we noticed that we need to kind of keep nurturing them through the funnel until they finally make that purchase and join the community as well.
I think that was going to be one of my main questions, is when you have these big groups of people over and a certain percentage of them make it to your website, what's been the most successful tactic? Is it offering something of value to that audience and in order for a sign up, or is it literally like, want to know more, sign up, SMS, like what's worked best there?
I think a discount, like we have a similar to some other D2C brands, a 20% discount to join the email list and then offering value through that email. So we have like an email newsletter, we'll release our new blogs, things like egg freezing, things like, you know, exercise on your cycle, really providing that value to our consumer through our email. And then they really enjoy the content. They enjoy all this like education and value that they're getting. And then it kind of reminds them the reason that they want to purchase and have this more comfortable product.
Cool. I wanted to jump back to SEO for a minute because I think we don't talk about it a lot. And I think I've fallen victim to this before where it's like SEO is this external thing where we'll bring someone in and they'll write a bunch of content. But I like the way you approach it, which is really, it's close to the vest, right? Where your team is the ones that really understand this stuff best. You're writing from this place of real authenticity. You're really just solving problems that you're seeing people ask about. I'm curious, with that SEO journey, like for ranking for why does my tampon hurt, for instance, was that like, how long did that take? Because I think some people think SEO takes years. I imagine if you've picked the right niches, you can do it a lot quicker. How long of a process has that been?
I think within like 3 months, we started to rank for a lot of the key terms. And there's a bunch of blogs that don't end up ranking, but then there's a bunch of blogs that do. So I think we have to just get good at like the keywords we're targeting and the way just the title makes a big difference. And then as long as someone reads it and they have value once they read it, but it's really just that like intro paragraph and the title that really gets someone to click through. And originally we started doing all the content ourselves, but now we actually work with university students who they're either writers themselves or some people are women's health advocates and they want to get more in the space and they just volunteer to write once a month for our blog. And so now we just have a lot of our content coming through these university students who are passionate about the space and they want to build their portfolio and get more experience.
Excellent flywheel. That's a great example of a flywheel at work in business. So on the SEO side, what does your content production schedule look like? Is it how many posts would you say are you launching in a given month?
For the blog, we do one blog a week. So it ends up being around 4 a month. Sometimes during big campaign months, we'll produce a few more blogs. So for example, PCOS Awareness Month or like Endometriosis Awareness Month, these are both conditions that are related to our product and people who could benefit from it. So during those times, we'll either like partner with a doctor or partner with a key influencer in the space and maybe put out a bit more content. But traditionally, it's around like once a week. So around 4 a month.
And then I'm always curious, your Dragon's Den experience sounds like it was very positive overall. Talk about that a little bit. And then I'm also interested in the ways that you've kind of built that into your marketing to your audience after the fact, because I think that's a real opportunity with brands like yours.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realize, but it's quite a long process. Like you have to audition, you have to meet with the producer. This was all happening for like months. We filmed the episode back in May and then it didn't actually go live until later in October. So we had to like keep our mouths shut for months about what actually happened in this episode. And I think the episode itself is, it obviously brings publicity and awareness, but it's really what you do with the episode and all the traffic you're getting afterwards. So we made sure to have like customized landing pages for Dragon's Den. We had email flows going out and SMS flows of, oh, heard about us from Dragon's Den? Okay, click here to learn more about our website. We had a bunch of content. Like we've now reused those clips into like so many different videos on TikTok, on Instagram. Now those videos are going viral on TikTok. So the actual episode itself did bring in some stuff, but it was reusing those clips and those like surprise reactions from the dragons on TikTok, on Instagram, and showing the behind the scenes again of like, how was it like to film it? Or, you know, what did we do leading up to the day? What was our outfits that we wore, our makeup routine? So really bringing people along for that whole journey, not just those 8 minutes that we had in the actual episode.
Hey D2C, you did it. You crushed out yet another Black Friday and Cyber Monday. As you reap the benefits of your hard work and enormous ad spend throughout this holiday season, take some time to get reflective about your marketing stack and ask yourself, is 2024 the year you make SMS your number one revenue channel? SMS is engaging, intimate, immediate. Best of all, it's owned media and it just works. Talk to PostScript, the preferred SMS revenue platform for over 12,000 forward-thinking D2C brands, including D2C Podcast, Favorites, Feastables, Olipop, Death Wish Coffee, and more. I've known PostScript's founder, Alex, for years and can tell you he's built PostScript to be fully customer-focused and always innovating great revenue-additive products like SMS sales and Fondue Cashback. If you want to make more revenue with SMS in 2024, start having one-to-one conversations with your customers at scale with PostScript. To learn more and for a special offer for D2C Podcast listeners, visit postscript.io/DTC. You mentioned Amazon. What's your strategy been like there? Are you being aggressive with ads or are you just sort of having a presence and letting that be a distribution center for the interest you're gathering elsewhere?
We really wanted to launch on Amazon because we realized that our shipping cost is a bit of a barrier, especially with a low cost product like ours, where, you know, the shipping cost can sometimes even be more than the actual tampons itself. Whereas Amazon, if people are already purchasing a bunch of stuff and they have Prime shipping, then they can just add our product into it. And especially for the US, it'll lead to faster shipping times versus shipping from our warehouse in Ontario. So those were kind of the main reasons why we did it. And we notice now that it actually is working a lot better, and people are discovering us on TikTok and then organically searching us on Amazon to see if we're available. We didn't realize, but it's almost like a Google in its own sense, where people will look at different products and then search to see first if they're available on Amazon before even going on Google nowadays, especially the US market. And we are being a bit aggressive with ad spend as well, but trying to also, in a similar SEO fashion, rank for keywords that people would be searching. So like trying to rank for organic tampons or tampon pain or things like that. We found that a lot of Amazon SEO is more focused on product-based searches versus Google is more like intent and knowledge-based searches. So we're trying to do the same strategy, but just like slightly different keywords when it comes to Amazon.
Can you describe your team? How big is your team at this point?
There's six of us. So myself and three other co-founders, we all met in university in that school project, and we all have different roles that we're responsible for. And then we've brought in two other people as well who really support on the social media marketing and content, since that is such a big part of the business as well.
And then do you work with agencies or do you do everything in-house?
We do pretty much everything in-house. For Amazon, we do have a contractor who is amazing, and we work with him, and he really helps us advise us on our strategy. We have a really awesome retail advisor who we work with, but most of the work is done in-house.
And then talk a little bit about the strategy you have on, are you running paid ads on Meta and TikTok as well, or really focusing on organic?
We are. Now we just started more recently to run ads on Meta and TikTok. So my co-founder Kiara, she leads our marketing strategy, and she's been getting really good at understanding the platforms. A lot of times she'll boost things on TikTok that are already doing well to just have it reach more people. And we know like if it's already organically doing well on ads, we should see a similar kind of success rate. But we are actually looking to hire a senior growth marketer or like a retail expert to come join our team. So if anyone knows of anyone, we're really looking for someone in the new year to come and kind of help us take it to the next level as well.
That's great. That's great. Great shout out. And then I feel like you've done a really good job with PR. I think anytime you have a brand that's changing the game a little bit, you've got a really great opportunity for PR, earned media as well. Talk a little bit about your strategy for getting your name into the public realm more.
I think for us, a big thing is building relationships. So similar to like investors or stakeholders or advisors, we build relationships with journalists and we'll invite them to our events. We'll like follow them on Instagram and be engaging with them. And that's led to a lot of PR rather than just like cold pitching, like actually building relationships for like months on end before we even have a key moment. And then, you know, when we launch a new product or we had the Dragon's Den episode, we're then able to pitch to them and say, hey, you know, like this is something that might be interested and you might be interested in covering it. And that usually works a lot better rather than just like cold outreaching. I also find a homegrown success story is the easiest way to get press. So like if you are in your local town, like pitching to the local newspaper or like your university's alumni newsletter, those are the easiest ways because they want to showcase a success that came from their town or from their university as well.
You mentioned government grants as well. And I think this is something, it's a little bit unique in Canada, I think. I think Canada does, there are a lot of different, you know, growth things available to Canadian entrepreneurs specifically. Can you talk a little bit about that environment, applying for various awards and grants and things and how that's worked out?
For sure. We've actually won $400,000 non-dilutive in grant funding, not just from the government, but also from different pitch competitions. And a lot of corporations are now offering grants. So one of the best ones we've won was the Canada Post grant. We won one from Visa, who did one for women entrepreneurs. We've won one from Amex. So there's a lot of awesome ones, especially for female founders, especially for young female founders of color. So we tick a lot of the grant boxes, I guess. But I think the best thing with grants is I have a whole tracker, and similar to the way you approach like investors or retail CRMs, I make like a grant CRM and I put all the list of the different grants I've found through different startup newsletters or through scrolling on LinkedIn. And I dedicate a day each week just to go through and fill out all these applications. And after a while, you'll realize that a lot of the applications are pretty similar. So you can kind of just adjust it slightly and use some of your answers. I have like a database of different answers that I've written in the past and then just adjust it slightly depending on the application. And the biggest thing is impact. A lot of these organizations are looking for a way that they can create impact through the grant. So if you're able to clearly highlight what that money will help you do, and not just like saying, oh, we're going to use it for marketing, but saying we're using it for this specific product launch with this specific retailer, and it will help us generate X amount of sales. So getting really specific with how you'll use the money and what that money can help you do so that they can clearly see the impact of what offering that grant will help you do.
Very cool. I'm curious, your product is innovating a very stagnant industry. Have you found any copycats? Are you worried at all about copycats or about these incumbents being like, oh, I guess we could make them less painful to use, which seems kind of crazy that they haven't.
We haven't seen any copycats, and luckily the incumbents haven't gotten into that product innovation space yet either. I think for us, we really want to hopefully just partner with one of these strategic incumbents in the future, potentially as an exit opportunity or to help us scale our retail distribution. But I think for us, it's more than just this product innovation. It's the overall brand and the community that we're building. And that's something that no other brand or competitor could replicate, even if they come out with a similar product. So that's why it was so important to us right from the first day to invest in that brand and that community, so that when we do come out with other products, it's more than just being a lubricated tampon company.
And then I think you've talked about it in the big picture, but what have been your best advice for someone trying to start this community? Because I think community is, like, as a base, is just going to be increasingly important as brands go. And brands without it are going to struggle. Big brands and little brands who don't have that real connection to their audience are going to struggle. What's been most sort of critical to that, do you think?
I think definitely finding your niche. So for us, that was like reproductive health. All of our content centers around that. The events and partnerships that we do are also surrounded around that, and really finding experts who can help build that. We're also launching a whole like membership platform where people can now just not have to rely on TikTok and our blog, but they can come into the Marlo membership and have access to direct events, exclusive content. So I think finding ways to own that relationship with the customer so that you're not relying on TikTok, email, or Instagram. And then if something happens with one of those platforms, suddenly your whole community is gone. So I think that's a big trend we're going to see in 2024, is how our brands now starting to own their communities and have it on their own platforms.
What are some of the more, or what's one of the more successful partnerships that you've been able to put together?
Ooh, that's a good question. One that we did in the summer was with Stacked Market in Toronto, and we did a pop-up store where they had like a startup program, and we got to have a pop-up store for 2 weeks, and we brought in so many incredible influencers to do like an influencer shopping day. We had a community shopping day. We hosted like different events each day, promotions. So I think that was a really good partnership, doing it with Stacked, and also a bunch of different universities. We've sponsored like entrepreneurship conferences, women in leadership clubs. Those have been really successful for us to reach the right target demographic as well.
Very cool, and fits in building the narrative of the business as well, in terms of getting PR and you know, bringing change to the world and all this. I think it's really smart. I'm curious, this is one question I wanted to start asking. What's one piece of your tech stack, of your business's tech stack, that you like couldn't live without or like are currently really enamored with?
Mm-hmm. There's so many. I would think, honestly, Notion. I use it every single day. We have all of our project plans on there where we can like tag each other in action items. We have all of our to-do lists, and we plan every Monday and Friday. We have like a list of weekly priorities that we go through and see how it ladders up to our broader project plan that we're working for each quarter. We have our whole social content calendar in there as well. So I would definitely recommend Notion or like similar platforms. Like there's Asana or like I think Monday.com. But for us, we love Notion. We use it every single day, multiple times a day.
That's a great show. We're a ClickUp team, and we do love the ClickUp, but Notion is just such a cool platform, and I've seen it used. It has it either in team internally, or whether you're creating something for an audience, it can be really valuable as well. I think that's a really good shout. So if there's anyone listening at Notion, that's a free shout out. There you go. You should come sponsor the newsletter. But if D2C were to bestow another grant, not $400,000, congratulations, but a $50,000 grant, how would you be using that in like Q4 this year to see the most growth?
Yes, we're actually launching with a few different retailers. So Healthy Planet is one of them. And so definitely we're trying to figure out the best way. It's a new thing for us, but to launch effectively with retailers, to have different shelf displays, in-store activations, demos. We have a few campaigns coming up towards the end of the year around like the holiday season and education as well. So I think we would use it towards some of those main growth priorities. And then we're working towards launching a new product early next year. So part of it would go towards that as well.
Very cool. I was just looking that the TAM of tampons is 4.1 billion. So there's quite an opportunity in the space. And as you're saying, you're even looking to expand out of that. What are your, you mentioned a little bit about strategic partnership with, someone like Unilever who does listen to the podcast. So what do you see for the future? What are you envisioning as the leader of this company for the future?
I think for us, we definitely want to build it to be a global household name across all stages of reproductive health, new products, new education, keeping the community centered to everything that we're doing, retail distribution across Canada and the US, and then also UK as our next market, and then expanding out from there. We're really looking to hire in the next couple of months as well. So definitely a senior growth marketer or a marketing lead, an ex-D2C company would be awesome if they already have experience in the D2C space. So those are kind of the initial things. And then potentially as an exit opportunity, a strategic partnership with a larger CPG company or a bigger D2C player even who's maybe grown as well. Those would be kind of our key partners. But because the community and our values are so important to us, we'd want to make sure that that partner also has similar values.
Nice. Well, you'll have to stay in touch and keep us updated on the growth. Really excited for it. If you want people, because I know you guys are building in public, so if you want people in the D2C audience to kind of follow along, where do you recommend they find you?
Yes, you can follow our TikTok at We Are Marlo or our Instagram at Marlo. We ourselves as founders have active Instagrams as well. So like you can follow any of the founders. I also have a newsletter called A Founder's Diary where we share weekly behind the scenes, learnings we're having, challenges we're facing. So that's really like my diary essentially in written form. And that's a really good place to learn about some of the behind the scenes as well.
What's one thing that you've written about in the last month or so that you were really proud of or think can help people?
One thing I wrote about recently was the balance between personal life and entrepreneurship. And I know that's something that a lot of founders struggle with and just overall like wellness as a founder and mental health. And I'm the kind of person who wants to put 110% into everything that I do. So if I'm not like doing every workout or like eating perfectly, then I get really down on myself. But I think I've learned that it's better to do some wellness than none. And it doesn't have to be an all or nothing mindset. So finding those few non-negotiables that work for you, whether that's like a walk every day or maybe, you know, time in nature or making sure you have a high protein breakfast, journaling, figuring out what those habits are for you that can help you be the most successful. It doesn't have to be an all or nothing mindset. And I think that started to resonate with a lot of people.
100%. It's just been in the past couple of years, actually. I'm 43 and I think I've had good habits before in my life, but I feel like in the last like year or so, I've really started to put in, as you say, non-negotiables. Mm-hmm. And it's been really beneficial, I think, to my health. So I fully agree. What are some non-negotiables for you?
For me, I love journaling every day. I have like a peppermint tea at night and journal before bed. It's just such a good way to like clear my thoughts. I try and do movement. I've been a bit more like flexible on what I classify a workout. So it doesn't have to be like weights or yoga. It can just be like however you're feeling to have movement within your week. And then a high protein breakfast. So like not having first thing in the morning, sometimes I would just have a coffee and I would be jittery all day. So yeah. High protein breakfast before coffee is a big one for me now too.
I love it. Nice. Some great advice out there. I'm fasting. I've been really working on my 16-hour fasting window, drinking a lot of water with electrolytes. My bio steal here. Hopefully they don't go out of business before. Because what a tragic Canadian story, eh? They have a great product. Their brand is everywhere, but they aren't making enough sales. It's sad to see.
Unfortunately, a case for a lot of Canadian brands. If you don't expand to the US, there's just not enough market size here sometimes for certain brands.
Great advice. All right, Nadia, thanks so much. This is fun. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.